This is Rated R, Real Estate Uncensored, hosted by Derek Anthony, right here in the great state of Texas. Welcome in, y'all. Welcome in. This show will include all things commercial real estate, from landlord interviews, tenants' perspectives, developers, lenders, all types of buckets that dip their toe into CRE. This program is affiliated with Waypoint Real Estate Advisors, based in Fort Worth, Texas, Cowtown, a full-service commercial real estate firm that includes brokerage, development, property management, capital markets, leasing, buy-sell, all types of asset classes, retail, office, food and beverage, multifamily, industrial, medical, and flex. Be sure to check them out at waypoint-red.com and follow Waypoint Real Estate Advisors on LinkedIn. Be sure to subscribe to our show and follow us on your favorite podcast platform. Or we have our own website, thepodcaststudio.net. Welcome in, y'all. Now here's your host, Derek Anthony.
What is up? What is up? Thank you so much for listening in. Thepodcaststudio.net is our website. This is Rated R, Real Estate Uncensored. We have a couple special guests today, but it's been a trial and tribulations market lately. It's been a little difficult, not as strong as it was 2 years ago, but we're getting through it right here in the great city of Fort Worth in Cowtown. This is Derek Anthony, your host. My first guest, or my two guests today, are newbies in the business of CRE, and they were interns that we hired, full disclosure, at Waypoint, and wanted to get their perspective on kind of what we did wrong, what we did good, what we did bad, and just the overall expectation of the business itself. You know, there's a lot of obviously nervousness and angst when you're still in college and trying to figure out your path, as I call it, adulting. And we wanted to get their perspective today. So the first, Jacob Clanton is with us. Jacob, say hello.
Howdy. My name is Jacob Clanton. I'm with Waypoint Real Estate, and I'm in third semester in the Master of Real Estate program at Texas A&M.
Awesome. And Hannah Burt?
Howdy. My name is Hannah Burt. I am a second semester in the Master of Real Estate program and also an intern here at Waypoint.
And if you notice, they did say howdy. If you don't know, that's a Texas A&M thing, which is awesome. So with that, you guys sort of kind of give us where you're from, where you grew up, and then sort of your background and why commercial real estate. Jacob, I'll start with you.
Yeah. I'm from McKinney, Texas, North Texas area. I went to Texas A&M to study finance and found a love for commercial real estate after doing an internship with a custom home builder. I love seeing the development process, and that led me to the Master Real Estate program. Through that, I met Waypoint going to ICSC, which is a real estate convention, and was able to network with them and connect, and thought this was a great experience. I kind of came onto this team with the expectation of learning a lot, and I have. So that's kind of my background.
So why A&M?
I toured a bunch of different schools, and Texas A&M has a really good finance program, as well as I just love the campus culture. There's a lot of traditions there, and I really felt like it was my home. I went there and found a great community at Mays Business School, and they have one of the best real estate programs in the country. They're top three. And thought that'd be a great avenue for me to pursue.
Awesome. And then undergrad versus master's, just you thought that was going to get you a little more information, or what was the thought process there?
Yeah, absolutely. I think what I've experienced is the master's program is definitely more engaged than my undergrad. I have closer relationships with all my faculty, and because I'm in the same classes with my cohort every single day, it's led to a lot closer relationships than in my undergrad, which I've really appreciated. It was more of just a deeper dive into what I was passionate about.
Gotcha. Hannah Bird, how about you? What made you get into CRE or have an interest in it?
Absolutely. I grew up on a ranch outside of Glen Rose, Texas, going there every weekend. And that just made me realize how much I love land. And so a couple of years back in college, I decided that I wanted to do something with land in some capacity. That began with oil and gas. I worked at an oil and gas acquisition company and thought that that was the path I was going to take. But once I was introduced to commercial real estate, I just fell in love with it. It's a lot, I would say, classier and yeah, I just love the culture of commercial real estate, love the culture of the people that are in commercial real estate, and love that I get to work with a tangible asset land every day.
Did you have relatives that went to A&M or just kind of gravitated to that?
Because, yes, sir. Yeah. My dad went to Texas A&M, so much so that I actually got into TU, as we call it, University of Texas, and he wouldn't let me tour. He said, I'm not paying for college if you go there.
That's hilarious. My daughters went to OU, so that's funny. I'll have to remember that. But so it wasn't because of the, it wasn't for the glamour or the fame or the thrill of cold calling strangers who don't want to talk to you?
No. No, not quite.
And we're going to get into some of that.
Yes, sir.
Okay. So I'll go to Jacob. So on a scale from HGTV fantasy to sleeping in your car, how accurate were your expectations going into this for the kind of all in 100%?
Yeah.
4 months of, or actually more than that, 6 months of working deals.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it really started to snowball once I got my real estate license. I was finally able to really get involved in the deals. I would say my expectations coming in were set high because I shadowed y'all at ICSC and I was able to see how y'all work and kind of what the work is like going to different retail booths and getting information from site criteria to contact info. I thought that was really interesting. I think I have a lot more experiences now than I anticipated, honestly, because I've been able to get involved with tenant representation, landlord representation, investment sales, and then also doing land acquisition for a multifamily developer, which has been really interesting. It's definitely more things within brokerage than I initially anticipated.
Hannah, how about you? What your expectations of, oh my gosh, this is so amazing to... Why did I do this? And why is everybody hanging up on me?
I will say cold calling's not my favorite, but apart from cold calling.
No, it is nobody's favorite.
It is nobody's favorite. I mean, getting hung up on, getting cussed out, it's not the best. But I will say.
How did you get my number?
Yeah.
The number of times I've had that question, man.
Yeah.
But apart from that, I think I had really high expectations. My expectations were met. The reason I took this internship is y'all had a really high value placed on mentorship and on teaching us just the ropes. And I've seen that every day. Every day I get to speak with you and Jake and ask y'all questions and get assigned different assignments. I mean, everything that I've done here is so different from everything else. And it's just been so nice to be able to work in such a small office in such like an intimate space so that I do get to ask questions and I do get to learn. And I have seen such a high value placed on mentorship, which is exactly what I expected and hoped for.
Yeah. Some of the larger firms, they kind of give you a co-star sign on and then, hey, here's 100 names to call about, say, a Starbucks investment sale that we want to see if they're interested in. But appreciate you saying that. So I'll go back to Hannah on a new question. What's one thing you've learned the hard way that no one bothered to mention, i.e. Jake and I, in training or through your summer, or maybe they did, or but you ignored it? What's maybe one thing you didn't expect on the other spectrum?
One thing I didn't expect and one thing I've learned the hard way is deals don't just happen overnight.
Amen.
Yeah, I think I was told that and I was told that the market is slow right now, but I figured, hey, like I'm going to get in there. I'm going to make some deals. But I have learned that the market is slow right now and things aren't really happening. Things fall through, right? We've had LOIs and leads on certain properties that have fallen through that we really thought were shored up. And so I think I've learned that the hard way, but also it's been good to learn and give some perspective, takes away a little bit of like the sunshine, butterflies, rainbows of the business.
Yeah, well said. Jacob?
I would say, I was going to say something kind of similar, but I think one thing that I've learned and I'm still learning is how to be efficient with calling people who have no idea who I am or no interest in talking to me. Trying to keep that conversation going is a huge skill and it takes a lot of time. And I'm still learning with every new conversation, kind of how to approach that, ask new questions, keep them on the line, and see what other needs they might have if what I'm calling about is not something they're interested in.
Yeah, that is an art. It does take a while. And from what I've heard in my office, you're doing a good job. Just keep doing what you're doing. Both of your we have police coming by. They're like, we didn't like that answer. We're going to arrest Jacob. No. So Texas, next question to Hannah. Texas is obviously huge, like really huge. So how did you figure out where to plant your flag? Obviously, we talked about your family where in this business, you're going to go chase and you're going to get in your car and you're going to you're going to spend a full tank of gas to go to have a meeting that lasts 10 minutes and then, or they didn't show up. So those are some of the things that they don't really teach you in college or adulting of, you know, a lot of people don't do what they say.
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. our job is obviously be that person to do what you say. And yes, mm-hmm. I can go meet you and you want to chase every lead. But I think the art of it as you're learning is how to qualify somebody on the phone first. Hey, I want to go see that space. Okay, that's great. We would love to show it to you. But here are five questions a landlord needs first. So I guess the overall question for you is kind of talk about how you've maybe learned that process through obviously the 3 or 4 months you were here and the cold calls and just you know, whatever the client needs, we're going to do at some cost. But at the same time, there's also costs that you have, your time and your money, and you're not making any money yet because you're still new. So a lot of people, like you said, oh, it's quick and easy, make a quick buck. Well, it could take you 2 years to make six figures if you're really hitting it hard.
Yeah. I think it takes time to figure out when a client is legitimate, and that's something that I've learned from the beginning of this internship. I thought every lead was a hot lead when I began. I thought every lead, every person that was interested in a space was going to end up in that space. But I think as time goes on and you get some more experience, you get to feel out whether or not this person is credible, and you get to figure out whether or not this person is legitimate, whether or not this person actually has what it takes to dive in and to get that deal done. And so I think a lot of that comes from just their history and having conversations with these people. It's not a 5-minute, oh, you want to open a restaurant? That's great. It turns into like a, hey, have you opened these before? Do you have an entrepreneurial spirit? Like looking into these people and looking into their past to see if in the future they will be credible and they will be someone you can rely on.
Yeah, for sure. Jacob?
Yeah, I think that's a huge thing within tenant representation. There's a lot of people who say they want to start a business but have no business plan, no credit backing. So it was definitely hard for me early on in the internship when I got a call like, hey, I got this company that I want to grow. And then a week later, I figure out, yeah, they are not ready at all. So that's been something that's been a learning process, asking those questions, which has been pretty interesting.
Yeah, sometimes we get these weird calls about, yes, well, what kind of business are you in? Well, I'm in the medical business. What kind of medical business? I'm in the natural products business. Do you sell CBD, sir? Yes. So you're trying not to be pushy, but you want to be professional. So there's a fine line between that. And if you, like Jacob said, reading the room and understanding if you feel like the other person's getting a little annoyed, it's more of a partnership phone call. Like, hey, we want you in the space, but I got to ask you these questions before we get in the car and spend an hour to go to Greenville, Texas and back. And it turns out that showing that I had that you guys are aware of. So I had a pediatric therapist wanting 4,000 to 5,000 square feet. And for those that don't know where Greenville is, it's about an hour and a half drive northeast of Fort Worth. Of course, I'm going to get in the car. I love the use. They were in business. I qualified them, got there, showed him. He loved the space. And he's like, oh, I'll take the whole building, 11,000 square feet. Oof. And he had one little comment about the ceiling height where some of their physical and occupational therapy, I'll call them widgets, that they actually hang from like a strap or a swing for stretching from the ceiling. And I get a call from the broker that next day saying, oh, we're going to pass on your site because your ceilings aren't too high, aren't high enough, excuse me. So, and the broker apologized. Mm-hmm. She didn't make the trip. So I was the only one there, but that's okay. I'm not complaining. It's just, sometimes that does happen in the business. And if you don't have really thick skin in this business, you're going to get beat down and depressed and pissed off and frustrated. And, oh my God, I thought they were going to take 11,000 square feet at $15 a square foot. And I was going to make XYZ. But I was like, okay, well, thanks for considering. And then you just got to move on. Mm-hmm. I always tell new people, you have to have amnesia in this business. And you also have to be a little bit schizophrenic because depending on what table or what side of the table you're on, if you're representing the landlord, I got to do it this way. If I represent the tenant, I got to say this and this and this. So it takes a little bit of time. Okay. So next question to Jacob. Have you ever had a moment where you thought, wait, what did I just agree to?
Yes.
And maybe while touring an abandoned warehouse or a retail or reading a 72-page lease.
I think early on, it was definitely a little daunting looking at some of properties, because some of these properties are not the Class A high-rise office buildings. They're the retail Class C properties that need a lot of work done to them. But those projects have a lot of opportunity within them, which is something that I realized. But yes, I think early on I was a little bit scared of walking in and seeing a completely abandoned Planet Fitness, you know, that's like 6,000 square feet. Just wondering what I could do with this space. Yeah, there was definitely those moments. Definitely.
And I always say words matter, even when you're on the phone, or because they're gonna throw it back at you. Like, well, Hannah said it. Hannah yeah. said this.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, she misspoke or whatever. Even I've said things that I was like, oh God, that wasn't really accurate. And if they call me out, I'm going to have to apologize or figure out a way out of it. But we do our best to say the line. Hannah, what about you?
I think the biggest, like, what am I doing here moment that I've had, Jake, one of Derek's partners, or his partner, sent me on an assignment to Granbury, Texas, which is a real nice little town, but sent me on an assignment to Granbury, Texas, sent me with 40 flyers and said, walk into businesses and ask them if they want to move into our space. And I said, okay. And so I walked my little butt happy, and as I tried my best, into these little businesses all alone. And I gave it my best shot, and I pitched to some random business owners of things like grill masters and nail salons and all different sorts of businesses. And I came back with no leads, but I had a great time doing it, and it was truly one of my favorite assignments this summer. I think it taught me to talk to people, and it taught me to make people comfortable with me. Just off the bat, it taught me sales.
They have to like you, first of all. Yes. And so I sometimes still do that too on door knocking. And one, I don't know, this is just the way I think how people look at people who come up and we're really not solicitors. My position on that is, well, I'm not here to solicit. I'm here to bring value to you. Yeah. I know it's mm-hmm. a weird way to flip it from a partnership perspective. Well, I'm not here to sell you anything. I'm just wondering if the owner's here and if they're, I mean, it seems like you guys are killing it. Uh-huh. Congratulations. But we have a bigger space across the street that we would love if you guys are open to relocate. That's one pitch. Second pitch is, if you walk in there with a folder with flyers, that's a negative, in my opinion. I'm not saying Jake did the wrong thing. I usually don't have anything in my hands, so I don't look like a salesperson. Mm-hmm. I might be a patient. I might be a customer. And I have business cards. Or I have postcards. So the postcards are small where I can put them in my pocket. So I don't look like I'm walking up like, hey, Jacob, look at this flyer. So I made these little two-sided postcards mm-hmm. With just basically a handout so I can leave it with the owner if they're not there. As you know, in some of these retailers and medical practices, they have a front person and it's hard to get to the decision maker. Mm-hmm. So for those listening, that might be a little attaboy that you might want to do in the future. So appreciate those stories. Let's talk about rejection. That's the hardest part, because even me as a 19-year-old, 21-year-old, 23-year-old, your family loves you. All your friends love you. You're like the best. And then you get into the working world of salesmen, and now you're getting rejected. Mm. Like, oh my God, what am I doing wrong? I'm horrible at this job. So the funny question is, how many times have you been ghosted and how did you cope? And crying in your car counts. Or drinking alcohol. No, I'm kidding. Jacob, go ahead.
I've probably been rejected thousands of times. I had this one property I was working on, Jake, with. It was a Burlington anchored shopping center. We're still working on it, but I had put together over 1,000 emails from CoStar, from tax records, from random people's information who own shopping centers across the U.S., put a list of thousands of contacts together, and we sent out a mailing list to these 1,000 people. I was expecting maybe, you know, out of these 1,000 people, maybe 10 respond. We had one response, and it said, never talk to me again. And that was it. Didn't hear a word back. But that taught me that, first off, mailing lists are very fickle.
Sketchy. Who knows?
Yeah, they're sketchy. No one really wants to respond to an email from someone random. So I started making more personal phone calls, trying to get them to like me on the phone, even though that's really hard. You're not face to face. And I had a lot more success doing that than just sending out random emails.
So there's, before we get to Hannah, there's a lot of, bigger firms always say, get the meeting face to face. So whatever, don't even pitch the asset, just get the meeting, because we know that you're going to get liked or disliked. You know, if they don't have time and they're going to push you off, it is what it is. But I would say out of the 100 calls you make, try to get 10% of those in face-to-face meetings. I know you're busy. I'll buy you a cup of coffee and maybe bring some type of report from CoStar. Hey, value-add report. Did you know absorption rate in the last 12 months is blah, blah, blah. That kind of pitch. So, yeah. But you're doing great. I think the underlining message here is you can be Zig Ziglar and the best salesperson in the world. Mm-hmm. It's just the nature of the beast of the business and getting started. And that's why we wanted to bring you guys in. We, Jake and I, have so much going on. There's enough ancillary business to help us with, to get into the weeds of the details of the deal, of the LOI, of the lease, of the PSA, of the process, of the development. That's how you're going to learn. I mean, you're great students of real estate, but in terms of real life situations and deals and what words mean and how do I orchestrate of how I say something or not say something. Like we had talked about the LOI for the tenant's broker is going to have this LOI and purposely leave things out. The landlord's going to have an LOI that purposely has things in it. So then that's the negotiation. So
yeah,
I think we're, did you answer the question first or you're up? Go ahead.
Yes, I'm up. I think the most heartbroken I've been over a deal is I got my license about a month ago, and the week that I got my license, I was assigned this tenant representation opportunity, this small little taco shop in Saginaw, Texas, and I got really excited about it. I probably spent my whole work week looking for sites and
in the restaurant. No, I'm kidding.
Just about. I mean, hey, they had me over for lunch, and that was one of the best lunches I've ever had. It was great. I got really excited about it though, and I drove Saginaw, Texas, several times, and I was looking for properties and calling brokers and all different sorts of things. And I got ghosted. The lady just said that she didn't want to be represented, didn't understand representation. I tried to explain it to her, and she just moved on without me and went for a space without me. And so I think I was pretty heartbroken about that deal, and I learned not to put all my eggs in one basket. You've got to diversify. Whenever you are in this business, you've got to be working on more than one deal at once, because if you put all your eggs in one basket and it falls through, all that time was wasted.
For sure. Great advice. So have you discovered, next question, have you discovered any tools, apps, or caffeine rituals that keep you from losing your mind in the business? It could be, hey, I got to go escape and go work out or talk to my friends or get on social media. Kind of, obviously, it'll drive you insane. I mean, you both have great work ethics, but at the same time, even I have my escape. Usually it's walking or working out or going to play golf or something to keep my mind off it. Yeah. What do you guys do?
Yeah, I think there were a few weeks while I was here where I was in the office 24/7, 7 days a week, just always working, just realizing that, you know, in brokerage, you have to get out of the office. You need to go to the sites. You need to go meet people. You need to go network. That has been very helpful for me to realize. At work, you're able to find those retreats and still be working, which is really something that I benefited from. And then whenever I'm home, I just kind of relax for a little bit, even though I still have my phone on ready. I want to make sure that if I get an important call that I'm ready to answer it, but just making sure that I take time for myself and relax when I can.
Yeah. How about you, Hannah?
Totally. You said caffeine rituals, and I actually very proud of myself this summer. I went from about 200 to 300 milligrams of caffeine a day to about 100. So we are moving up.
I'm impressed you keep track of the milliliters or caffeine, whatever the hell you just said.
Yeah. Well, you see, at 5'1", 200 milligrams of caffeine really affects you. Okay. And so I've been trying to cut back. And so pretty proud of myself with that, actually. I think going from school to work has helped with that, which is great.
And they say caffeine is actually a sort of acts as Ritalin. Well, it gets you, and I'm a caffeine user too.
Yeah.
User.
User.
I used to drink 3 Mountain Dews a day.
Holy cow.
And then I cut back, and then I went to Red Bull, and then I'm off of that too. So anyway, yeah. But yeah, everybody has their own
recovering
little weights. That's right. I'm a recovering caffeine addict.
That's pretty funny.
So if you had an elevator pitch, when somebody asks you, what exactly do you do? How often are you mistaken for a residential agent? Because people say you're in real estate. I always have to say, well, I don't do residential. I do commercial. And they're like, yeah. Oh, I mean, do your friends or circle of influence or even aunts and uncles might ask you?
Oh, even mom and dad. But I did a little study of this actually on my own back in College Station. I was in a sorority back home or back in College Station. And every single time I said I was getting my master's in real estate, someone would tell me, my mom's a realtor. Yeah. And so I got up to speak in front of the entire sorority, 300 to 400 girls. And I said, okay, girls, raise your hand if your mom's a real estate agent. About 75% of that room raised their hand. And I said, that is not what I am here for. I am doing something different.
Then you should have said, how many have done, of those parents, how many have done at least 10 deals a year? All the hands would have went down.
All the hands go down. Yeah. But it was just, it was pretty hilarious to me. I was like, man, so this is like the crowd that I'm working with. But have gotten to give that pitch. And I know, I mean, this is a different topic, but I'm very passionate about women in commercial real estate. I've joined crew and things like that. And so got to talk to these girls and be like, hey, like, this is what commercial real estate is. It's a viable career. Yeah, but it takes a minute to explain that. I am not selling houses.
Jake?
Yeah, same thing. I'm not a sorority, but same thing. Yeah, definitely had a lot of conversations with family that I'm not going into residential, and it's a completely different beast. I've had two people who've wanted me to represent them on either selling a house or finding them property that's residential. Like, I can't really do that. Completely different platforms, completely different tools, different expertise. I'm supposed to stay in my lane, and I am, and commercial real estate. So definitely had the similar thing of people thinking that was residential.
So now that you have had 6 months for Jacob and a couple of months for Hannah, if a brand new student or somebody like me who was in the commercial or corporate world and got into real estate, sort of my second half of my life, they're going to ask you, what do I need to do? What are the tools to survive this? And you can be sarcastic or you can be serious. So, Jacob, what do you think are the, say, top three or four things that you need to be successful? I know you're still getting into the weeds on most things, but I think you have the good characteristics to be successful. So
yeah, entrepreneurship is a big one. In this business, you are pretty much working on your own deals. You're not working as much on other people's deals unless you're working for a large company, right? You need to have that drive that, you know, you wake up and nothing's really guaranteed. You need to go get it. I think that's probably the number one. You're pretty much owning your own business. You're presenting yourself as your own company, and like, I'm here to represent you. It's not really the company, it's me. Which is something I really enjoy. I like having my own type of brand. I don't know if it's a brand, but because I'm with Waypoint, but you're pretty much representing the brand by yourself, which I think is really, really something that I'm interested in.
Hannah?
I think you've got to have a good personality. If you don't want to be crunching numbers on Excel for the rest of your life, then you've got to be you've got to have a good personality. Know how to talk to people. I know Derek always reiterates, know how to read a room. Know how to come across as likable and get deals done, because that's how it happens. I think also similar to what Jacob just said, you've got to be okay with the fact that sometimes the market's great and sometimes the market's not. Take those opportunities, take those ruts as they come, but prepare yourself that this is not a guaranteed six-figure salary every year. It's going to be different every year based off the market.
And we all get into this, and I've told you guys this before, but for people who are considering coming in or new to the business, and maybe you're not getting the deals that you expect to get and the money that you want to make, and there's a lot of pressure. So I would just say double down. And if you're, like Jacob said, if you're disciplined, you're a likable person, you have all the tools to be successful. The only person to blame is you. Everybody wants to blame somebody else, but I'm a proponent of, hey, shame on me. Look myself in the mirror. And how do I spin this a little bit different? How do I get more leads? How do I turn an LOI into a deal? Is it the attorney? Is it a deal point where I can help my landlord see the light? And a lot of the other things too is, excuse me, is a lot of brokers are afraid to push back on their client. And that's one thing I've never been afraid of, as long as it's factual and not emotional. Mm-hmm. And if it's a deal point that's changeable, or I would say just possibly to change a deal to make the other side see the light, so to speak. But even CoStar has this great lease analysis that you can use on a Performa and cash flow, and there's all kinds of tools that you can use. And so anyway, that's my soapbox on that. Jacob, you have some?
Yeah, I was going to say this kind of combination of being likable and, you know, running your own business is being persistent. Mm-hmm. Follow-up is huge within commercial real estate. I have an Excel sheet that shows me how many times I've left voicemails for people, and a lot of them are like 3 voicemails, and then I call them again, you know? And it's not like, hey, pick up your phone, I've got to get contact with you. It's like, hey, would love to connect, would love to get coffee at some point. Persistence is huge in this industry.
It used to be 5 touches, meaning follow-ups, and now it's 7 or 8.
Wow. Yeah.
Because people hide behind their phone, they hide behind their email, they hide behind their... I can have a whole podcast about texting, which I'm not a big fan of when it comes to deal points. And people, if it's like, hey, are you here yet? Sure. But why are you texting me deal points? Let's have a conversation or an email. Yeah. Because in track and us as brokers and agents, we want to make sure we can document everything in case something does come up in the future. So email is the easier way to do that. But yeah, that's all great advice. A couple more and then we'll be finished. So again, if you're new to, we have Jacob Clanton here as well as Hannah Burt. They're in the master's program at Texas A&M. This is Rated R Real Estate Uncensored. Be sure to follow us on any podcast platform as well as our own website, thepodcaststudio.net, Rated R Real Estate Uncensored. I am Derek Anthony, a partner here at Waypoint Real Estate Advisors in the great state of Texas right here in Fort Worth. So with that, we're going to get into some fun stuff. I guess I have one more question, and this is the buzzword of 2025 is AI. Mm. Mm. Because you're younger and I'm older, we'll just leave it at that. I'm always a proponent of new technology, and I'm fine to learn it. And I do use ChatGPT as that's kind of the, I'll call it the baseline of AI right now. And then there's so many ancillary and more detailed programs that we can use in commercial real estate. There's AI programs that can actually do a lease abstract. Mm-hmm. So what that means for people that don't know, if there's a 75-page lease, it will abstract or take out all the important deal points and give you like a 1-page bullet point of what the deal points are. My fear on that is, well, did they miss something? Is that 100% trustworthy? But if I just want to see rent abatement and cost per square foot and triple nets and TI, that's probably on there. But is there restrictions and exclusives? Is there a build out area where you can't build an out parcel because of line of sight? Those are some of the things that we don't want to get complacent with and could cause a problem down the road. But in addition to being new, as well as myself, you want to make sure that you know how to read a lease and then abstract that and know, hey, here are the points like, hey, I got a breakfast concept. Oh my gosh, I didn't know a breakfast diner was exclusive or restricted into the center. So Jacob, yeah. Do you use AI at all in the business?
Absolutely. I'm glad you asked that because it's a big focus within our master's program is the use of AI and how to do that well. Some people use AI as a crutch and kind of a replacement of what they should actually be learning. That's not the right way to use it. It's a tool that you should be using to assist you in learning. For example, whenever I was studying for the real estate license exam, I used AI to help me understand parts of the textbook. That is a great application of AI. That way I'm not combing through 1,000 pages of information to try and get, you know, understand the content. Here, I'm able to use it to help understand the material as well. I'm able to put in a lease and say, hey, what is this clause? What does this mean? That's been super helpful for me as a learning tool. I think once I have more experience under my belt and I really understand leases in more depth, I might be able to build some AI that would allow me to automate that a little bit more. But you always have to double check work, especially if it comes from AI and especially now.
Yeah, Hannah?
I think the biggest thing with AI is that it helps with efficiency. Like Jacob said, people use it as a crutch and use it as a substitute for learning and a substitute for working. And I don't think that that's right. But to use it for efficiency is great. I think, like you were saying, being able to have a lease abstract and be able to read through that quickly and understand what's going on is very helpful. I know that I was actually contacted by someone with Banu AI. which is interesting. They do outbound calling. Not sure how I feel about that, but maybe that could help with efficiency in a larger firm that does not have the capacity to be making those calls themselves. There's so many different options and so many different ways that you can use AI, but like Jacob said, it should be used to make things more efficient, not to substitute your work or to use it as a crutch.
Yeah, crutch or laziness or like we've reviewed some contracts, and so we want to make sure that obviously we know what we're reading and, mm-hmm. and what the words mean. So this has been great. I hope you guys enjoyed the summer and great good luck. Well, you don't need luck, but I'm sure you'll kill it for the fall semester coming up. And again, this is Hannah Burt and Jacob Clanton with us. You can find them on LinkedIn as well. Hopefully you'll see them down the road on some deals with any brokers here in the great state of Texas. This is Derek Anthony. And we appreciate you hanging out here at Rated R Real Estate Uncensored. Be sure to follow us on any podcast and subscribe. Rated R Real Estate Uncensored. We appreciate you listening and have a great week.